the Mom Genus Podcast. Two dental hygienists who became friends and later became moms, who understand the struggles, the joys, and the self-doubt of raising kids, staying sane, and working. Listen to our regular conversations about everything except the kitchen sink.
Welcome to the Mom Genus Podcast with Christy, Jasmine, and Karen. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Mom Genus Podcast. This is your co-host, Jasmine Haley. Karen and Christy were not able to make it for this episode, but we have a special guest for you today. I cannot wait to introduce you to her. Her name is Malia Black. She is a lover of life, women, 80s music, Lord of the Rings, and anything to do with the moon. She is a multi-passionate entrepreneur, midwife, and women's wellness coach who had three amazing children and three crazy postpartum experiences that influenced her passion and why she started her business. A few years ago, she had a horrific car accident and a near-death experience that would cause her to awaken that bad A woman. Okay. And she's always been one, but it really started a spiritual journey for her. And what she realized is that she wants to help and is helping other women find and trust that wild, bad A woman that lives inside of them. Because we know that even though we've come a long way, women are still conditioned to be quiet, appropriate, and palatable. Amen to that. So she is conquering all of the BS that we've seen as far as people explaining how a mother should present. And she's helping women through pregnancy and the postpartum experience and be able to conquer that as stronger women. So welcome to the show, Malia.
Thank you so much for having me. It's exciting to be here.
I'm excited to have you. First of all, there's so much that we can dive into. You know, we have, I'm a healthcare provider. You're a healthcare provider. We all have, like, when you're a healthcare provider, I feel like the issues we deal with are like on a heightened level, especially sure. when you already have some familiarity with healthcare in general. But I guess the first question I want to ask you is kind of like, what got you into midwifery? And we'll start with that and then start talking about some of the experiences that we as women aren't comfortable enough talking about, nor do we have providers willing to really dive in deep with us. So let's talk about your midwifery first. What led you into that career?
Yeah, so if you had told me when I was younger that one day I would be a midwife, I would have laughed. Because that was never on my radar. I wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to be all kinds of things, but that was not one of them. I really became a birth professional, a doula, and then a midwife from my own birth experiences. My first birth was pretty uneventful, kind of, you know, textbook. My second was an induction that led to a cesarean that I didn't expect to have. My first birth had been really easy. So to have a cesarean with my second and not really be prepared for what that entailed, it was traumatic for me. It was a harder recovery. And I just felt like my care provider had not really given me all the information that I needed to know. Like, is this normal? Is it not? And I still look back on it this day as like a really traumatic experience. I had not planned on that, on having other children after that. Mm-hmm. And then 10 years later, after that experience, my surprise joined us and I was terrified of having another experience like that one. A lot had changed in the birth world. So when I started talking to my care provider about having another vaginal birth rather than an automatic cesarean, I noticed there was a lot of resistance. Mm-hmm. And they kept telling me about risks and things like that, which I had already studied and knew the risks were low, but they did not feel, it didn't feel low to them. And I was like, but I'm the person having the baby. Mm-hmm. I get to decide what risk I want to take on. And I know that my body can do this. And the response I would get was, well, we might let you try, you know, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm the consumer. You are being hired by me. What are you telling me you're going to let me do? And that did not sit well with me at all. And so the passion born out of that experience is what led me to become a birth professional so that, number one, I could help women know their options. And number two, provide an option. I ended up hiring a home birth midwife for myself because I didn't feel safe with care providers who were speaking to me with that kind of language of allowing me to do something and acting like they wanted to protect me from myself when I had done my own research and I knew what I wanted for myself and for my body. So that is how that was born. That's just kind of my personality. When I see an injustice in the world, I'm like, all right, I'm going to become whatever I need to be to help with that. So that's what I did.
Yes, you're a total rock star, Malia. You know, as you were talking and kind of sharing your experience, I feel that even the listeners right now, they have got to resonate with that because I resonate with that. I felt that I was being backed into a corner. I felt that I wasn't being heard. In fact, I am so thankful for Sarah Sable. I have never been able to find this nurse. She was in Baltimore, honey, with Sarah Sable. I don't know if we can ever find you, Sarah, but Sarah, I'll never forget you because you were a nurse that advocated for me to have a vaginal birth. I was being rushed in my first pregnancy. I mean, your first pregnancy, hello, your body has never done it before. It's going to take a while to open up.
Yep.
I was being rushed. It was the baby was not in distress. The doctor wanted to leave, go home, do whatever. Wanted was pushing a C-section on me. She went and found midwives that helped position me in a different way than where what I was, which was laying on my back. And I wind up opening up and having a vaginal birth. And even when I was pushing my child out, the doctor was pulling so hard on my vaginal opening and wind up, you know, it wind up tearing instead of easing the baby out through that process. And if Sarah didn't advocate for me, I would probably wind up having a C-section. And what was interesting was that she got reprimanded from the doctor because of what she did. And she wound up coming to me to apologize. And I said, don't ever apologize for the fact that you empowered me as a mother that was not under any distress to choose what was best for my body at that time, which was to allow it to breathe, mm-hmm. right? To the best of my ability while I'm laying there. And because of that, I went with a doula and a midwife for my second pregnancy. And I had another successful vaginal birth. But I was in a hospital setting. So if I needed a C-section or anything like that, I could have gone that route if there was an emergency. But there's not enough of us empowered and there's not enough communication about the fact that we are being bullied in some instances. Now, we're not talking about, you know, emergencies, but we're talking about like true bullying that's happening on prefaces for doctors when it's not their body.
Exactly. And it's interesting. We're recording this right now during Birth Trauma Awareness Week. And your wow. story is common. Like, it's just, you've heard the same story over and over again. I was being rushed. I was being hurried. They started talking about a C-section. I didn't want it. Yeah, and not everyone had that nurse or a doula or somebody who could say, hey, let's try some different positions. Let's do some different things. And in my opinion, it's criminal. Like, it's criminal to operate on a woman and know that she has to recover from that when a few position changes may or may not have helped, but at least she tried. Yeah. And what we have found with birth trauma, and this relates to our experiences in postpartum, is it's not about the kind of birth a woman has. Even if her birth plan goes totally off the rails and she ends up with the opposite of everything she wanted, as long as she felt like she was part of the decision-making process, it makes all the difference in the world in how she processes her experience afterwards. But if she feels much like you, that she was bullied or rushed or given, not given all the information or given information that wasn't correct, that stays with a woman for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it really affects a woman's, and I should say a birthing person's, confidence in their body and confidence in their ability to parent. Because you're thinking, if I didn't even know and stand up for myself in that moment, how am I gonna raise a kid?
Yes. And I had postpartum depression with that baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when the medicine wore off, how hard it was for me to walk and to use the restroom. And just like, I felt so unstable, right? Versus when I went and had a midwife and I literally was just up and walking. Like, although towards the end, I decided to get an epidural again, I was more empowered. I was calmer. I was able to get myself back up and together quicker than when I had the other experience. And it was traumatic. That's why I can remember it so clearly and why I'll never forget that RN's name.
Yeah.
You know, she was probably a new graduate for all I know, because usually when you're a new graduate, you don't really know the repercussions for your actions.
Yeah.
You just know what's right, you know? And she's like, oh no, I'm going to go find out and like get some more answers for her. She didn't have to do that. She didn't have to do that, but she could tell I was scared and I didn't want a C-section. I come from a mother who had 6 children, right? I come, and her mother had 11. Like, my mother's first child was had, she had it in a house. Like, I knew it was possible for my body to open up, you know? So the possibility enough was enough for me to show my displeasure, especially if the baby wasn't in distress.
Right.
Man, I tell you. So going into being in that healthcare HMO type of insurance, because we already know the differences that happen. And unfortunately, our medical providers are dictated not on what's best for patients, but based on insurance. I went into getting the postpartum care with just the basics. Didn't really have someone to talk to. And so I kind of want to talk about what led you to focusing on women who deal with postpartum depression, because depression, anxiety are such icky words. And for those that can't see me, I'm putting the quotation marks in general. And if you're not looking like Superwoman after having your baby, something's got to be wrong with you.
Yes. Yes. First, I want to preface this with saying, this month I will turn 49 years old. And so, you know, the older you get, the more like, the more passionate you tend to get about the injustices that you experienced when you were younger. And that's kind of what happened to me with postpartum. You know, what I was seeing over and over again were, you know, postpartum really falls through the cracks. Like, when you're pregnant, you see your care provider once a month, more frequently close to the end. When you're postpartum, you have one visit, that 6-week visit. You have one visit and that's it. Unless you take initiative to see a lactation consultant or, you know, a postpartum doula, or unless you're having an issue, a complication, there's nobody checking in on you to make sure that you're okay. And what I started seeing now as a midwife is this trend of curated postpartum. And it's on social media. And there's these women on there, and maybe they've got a tear running down their face, but in the background, their house is perfect and their hair still looks really good. And I'm not saying you can't look put together during your postpartum, but that's not a realistic picture of what happens postpartum. If you're going to get on there and tear and show your postpartum, then do it from a realistic place. Don't curate the background, because it's that type of, that is a patriarchal construct that has been conditioned in women, that no matter what, you need to look like you've got it together. Mm-hmm. And so now we're still under that conditioning. Even when moms are on social media, quote, being honest about postpartum, there's still the need to curate the background. There's still the need to curate the captions. And we just need to be raw about it. And, you know, not try to curate what we think it should look like. Because yes. That's what we've been conditioned to do.
Oh, preach it, Malia. I mean, I feel that, you know, as a society, I'm just thinking about last year I hosted a conference for women who kind of felt stuck, overwhelmed, fear, dealing with not being able to pursue what they would desire in their career. As a society as a whole, for all women, no matter what industry you're in, no matter if you have 1, 2, 3 children, we are okay with people wearing masks. And I'm telling you right now, with postpartum depression and anxiety, my house wasn't clean. Like, half the time, I don't even know if I brushed my teeth. Do you understand? Like, yeah. that's my hair wasn't combed. I didn't care what I looked like at that point, what my house looked like. I just want to make sure the baby was okay, but I was still severely depressed. So, you know, this curated, I love the fact that you brought that up. These curated images of what postpartum depression looks like. You know, depression, I've suffered with depression anxiety just for me. And look at me right now. I am smiling, having a great conversation, but on the inside I could be dealing with some really rough crap. But yeah. We don't make it a safe place for women to be able to share that. It's too much for us. Or why aren't you doing enough for your kids or for your husband or whatever? Like, I remember once, and I've said this quite a bit, I was dealing with a really hard time with my first one, and my husband had needs, and I just could not handle taking care of a baby all day and then having my husband come and say, hey, let's get down with the get down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I told a friend, and my friend was like, well, just take a warm bath. And that's the patriarchal crap that we're dealing with, right?
Like, right.
I wanted to gouge her eyes out. Like, like a warm bath is not going to help the fact that I'm feeling overwhelmed right now.
Yes. Yes. You know? And we glorify sacrificial motherhood from the day you become a mother. We glorify, you know, Mother's Day comes around and everybody posts these things about, oh, my mother gave up everything for us. She gave up all her personal comforts for us. And I'm like, well, they're not talking about me because I didn't do that. Like, you know, like that is not what we want, because what we see is that that's not working. That's not working for women. You know, our health as a whole and women as we get older is not good. Our rates of cancer, our rates of heart disease and things are all on the climb. And sacrificial, because we are sacrificing ourselves, we are putting our whole family's needs above our own. And, you know, because that is glorified, again, a patriarchal construct to glorify that, because that is glorified, we feel like that's what a good mother does. And so when we start thinking about feeling that postpartum depression coming on, first, we're not really sure. Is this postpartum depression? Have I just not slept? Is something, you know, am I just not grateful enough? We do all that first. Then when we think, okay, maybe it is postpartum depression, we're like, well, I really don't have time to go to the doctor. To go to the doctor or go to my care provider would mean I have to pack up the baby and the other children if that's an issue. God, that seems so exhausting. And so then, you know, you'll talk to somebody and say, gosh, you know, I'm really not feeling like myself. And whether it's a friend or, you know, a parent, your own parent or whatever, somebody will just say, well, just get out and get some sunshine. You know, go for a good walk. And you die inside when you hear somebody say that, because you're like, really? Is that my problem that I haven't been for a good walk today? Like, you know, we've really allowed the dialogue around depression and motherhood to become really sinister. And we almost blame the mother. We're blaming her. Are you not doing enough of this? Are you not doing enough of that? Are you not taking, you know, your supplements? Are you? And it's not, that's not the way it should be. Like, this is not about fault. This is a medical condition. You know, just like if a mother were to develop diabetes after her pregnancy or, you know, develop any other condition, it's not any different than that. And, you know, it really is falling through the cracks right now. You know, in the United States, postpartum hemorrhage is the number one reason that women die in that period around childbirth, but suicide is the second. And a lot of people don't know that. And what? So, yeah, a lot of people don't know that. And it's that overwhelm. And while it is a physiological condition, and that can't always be avoided, that there are causes. So there's causes of postpartum depression, and that is that cocktail of hormones that is forever shifting right after you have a baby. But then there are contributors, and those are the things in our environment that exacerbate what's going on physiologically. So, you know, if you've got the physiology happening, but on top of that, you have a partner that's not helping, or maybe you don't have a partner at all. And so you're all on your own and you don't have a support system around you and you don't have a social system. So you're not talking to anyone. You're extremely isolated. If you've got other kids that you're taking care of, if your baby has some type of a health issue or need that makes them a little more demanding than the normal, all of those things are then the contributors that exacerbate the physiological condition that's already happening and make it worse. And so, you know, postpartum, even before COVID-19, postpartum, most women would call it a very lonely time. Not necessarily because you were alone. There may have been people in your house, but because you feel like no one is acknowledging or witnessing what is happening to you. And you feel unseen because people walk in the door and like, well, you're upright. Well, you know,
where's the baby? Yeah. Never mind you.
Yeah. Where's the baby? Can I hold the baby? Can I hold the baby? And you know, how nobody says, how are you doing? Nobody says, you know, because, you know, you're out of bed, you're not curled up in a dark corner in somewhere. You know, no one is, everyone is assuming you're fine.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that postpartum depression, and I'm putting quote air quotes around that for those who can't see me, doesn't present as depression. When we think of depression, we think of staying in the bed, not getting dressed, not taking a shower, you know, not turning on the lights, keeping the drapes closed. That's not how it typically presents. Postpartum depression typically presents as anxiety, OCD, constant fear that something's going to happen, you know, fear that a woman may be standing at the top of the stairs and she suddenly has this vision of her falling down the stairs and killing her baby. That is how postpartum depression typically presents. It's not the mother who won't get out of bed or, you know, who is feeling walking around with this dark cloud. It might be the mom who is, her house is spotless because she's trying to control every single thing that she can because her life feels out of control. It's very different and you have to be aware, and people just aren't because we don't talk about it a lot.
Yeah, I'm so happy you share that. That was actually going to be my next question, because I know that there are some listeners that may not even realize if they're dealing with it, or even if they're of a loved one may be dealing with it, or, you know, how to, especially for those, because we have listeners that are in the grandparent phase right now, but like, how can you help the next generation of women out there? So I would like to ask you, because, you know, you have a program specific for women. You help them before the baby arrives, and you also help them as they are. So this is beyond your midwifery, before catching that baby, as a baby is pushed out. You have a group program to help these women to prepare for this if it does so show up, but also how to get over that postpartum phase. So I would be curious to know, for especially for the listeners, what would you say are the top three things that a new mother, or even one that, you know, may have multiples, that they should consider in order to protect and create a safe space for them in that postpartum phase?
Yeah. So when I work with women, what I encourage them to do is, number one, prepare. prepare, because once you're in it and you're sleep deprived, it's hard to really see. And so invest in yourself, invest in your preparation, invest in, you know, someone to help you think of the things that, you know, just let somebody do the thinking for you. A lot of what I do in my program is just give you the things to think about, talking points for you and your partner, talking points for you and your family and your support system, so that you have all these things set up ahead of time. And in the moment, you're not having to articulate your needs, because nobody can really articulate what they need when they've only had 2 hours of sleep. So preparation is a big part of it, and a big reason I do what I do. The second thing I would say is appoint someone to be your director. You need a director for your postpartum. You need a point person that is going to check in on you. And the three things that anybody, but especially a director, but anybody should ask a new mom, the one thing that I tell people to ask a new mom is, hey, tell me three things that are going well right now. If she cannot think of one thing, or if one thing is a struggle to come up with, that's a red flag. If she can't say, oh my God, the baby smiled at me yesterday. Oh my gosh, he's getting so fat. He's eating so much. It's so amazing. If she's not saying things like that, that's when we know we need to go into action. And that's why I encourage people to have a director to kind of say, okay, it's time for us to kick in with meals and help and support and texts and checking in, those types of things. The third thing I would say is get postpartum support. It's, mm-hmm. You can prepare for the things you can prepare for, but it's still going to be hard. And so what I do for women is I send them a text message every day. I have a big group text I send out to moms every day, reminding you that it's normal to feel the way you feel, that you are amazing, that you are a bad A, you know, that all of those things are true. But that this is also hard, and to let yourself off the hook. Sometimes as women in various things in our life, but especially postpartum, we just need to be given permission to feel what we feel, and permission to, we need to be told that we're normal and that it's not just us. And, you know, there are some women who seem to breeze through postpartum, but I would say the majority could use that daily support, just somebody to remind you in the midst of, you know, not knowing when's the last time you brushed your teeth and how the little amount of sleep you got last night, and you just realized you're walking around with poop on your shoulder, all of those things, to get a text message or to get a word from somebody that just says, hey, you're amazing. Even with poop on your shoulder, you're amazing. That makes all the difference in the world sometimes with how somebody manages their feelings and emotions in that postpartum period.
Yes. And you know, you're so right, because you said something earlier about the fact that a lot of us in that postpartum phase feel lonely. And as soon as you said that, it was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. The first one. The second one was a whole nother ball game for me. I did have some postpartum anxiety, but the first one especially was so hard. And you do. Yeah, there was people visiting, but I still felt alone. There was mm-hmm. no one I could really share how I was feeling, and they gave me a shoulder to really lean on. Now, mm-hmm. I had a girlfriend that had her own children, but she was complaining. Which, hey, that's no help, okay?
Right. Not so, the time.
Right, like...
Read the room. Right?
She's complaining about her raising her own kids, and I'm just like, okay, like, this is no help. So I really love what you're doing. I value what you're doing. Keep doing it, Malia, because we need more people like you. I wish I had that. I'm just so happy I found the doula for my second, because she actually paid a postpartum visit to me.
Yeah.
We met, I think, twice, in addition to the doctor. But I found her because I was in a cloth diapering shop, you know, I didn't even know what a doula was.
That's amazing.
You know? So it's just, we need a sisterhood and a community. This is why this podcast exists. And for us to be able to talk about these hard topics that are just outside of our duties as a clinician to care for our own patients. We can't do our best for our own patients. We can't do our best for our children. We can't do our best for our partner unless we're taking care of ourselves.
Absolutely. And we need intentional community. And that's, you know, people are like, well, you know, what about just joining like these groups online and things like that? And those are great for a lot of people. You can do that. But what I wanted to do is create an intentional community where, you know, there was a safe place to be. You know, I've talked to a lot of moms who go into these communities and they get some help from them, especially like Facebook groups and things like that. But then there's also shenanigans going on in there. There are people complaining about, you know, there's people saying things that are racist. There's people judging other moms for whether they breastfeed or don't breastfeed. And so you're trying to find community, but it's not a safe community. And what I wanted to do is create a safe community where shenanigans like that are not going to happen. And this is a place of truly being seen, heard, and witnessed and supported.
Yes. I literally had to give people the we have a Facebook group that's actually ending today of this recording called A Safe Place for Mom Genis, and it's just going to be an archive group. But a couple of weeks ago, I had to give people the door and say, here you go, get on out. If you are a supporter of bigotry, misogyny, and racism, right? Because hello, I'm Black.
Right.
And our other co-host is Native American, and our other co-host is white. You know, we believe in a true community where everyone has a safe place to share whatever they desire. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to accept anything less. And I think we need to get to a place where we allow that. I feel like there'll be deeper connections that way.
Absolutely. You know?
All right. Please tell the listeners where they can find you, how they can find out about the work that you do, or maybe even join your group for those who are currently in that phase of planning for their postpartum experience.
Yeah. So go to yourempoweredpostpartum.com is my website. The course that I'm putting together is still in process, but it will be rolling out hopefully by the end of this month. But even without the course right now, I still have a group in place that you can join. It's like a membership group, but I send you daily text messages, and we meet on Fridays on a Zoom call, and that's our time of community together. We talk about various topics there. And you can learn more about me too on Instagram, Your Empowered Postpartum there also. So yeah, come to either of those places. I would love if there's moms who need support. Really, the first year is postpartum. So that whole first, if your baby is 6 months old and you're like, oh my gosh, I feel like I still need the support, come on in. Most of the moms in there, some of them are already pregnant again. They've been in there for a while. So, you know, it's just a wonderful place of support and a judgment-free zone. So I welcome anyone.
Oh,
to come in and
I
get that support.
That. Yeah. Yes. Well, this has been really great, Malia. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your expertise and for all you do.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's so much fun.
Absolutely.
Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review.
Like us on Facebook.
See you next time.